Okay, the mitzvah from this week's Sedra that I want to discuss is the mitzvah of Bir Maisros and Vidui Maisros. Removing the Truma Maiser from your house and the confession, the declaration that's made when you do that. Let me read to you first what the Torah says, and then we'll go into some of the laws and some of the ideas behind it. Ki sechalela aser es kol ma'asar tvu ascho v'ashonah ha-shlishis shnasa ma'asar v'nosato la-levi, la-ger, la-yosom, v'la-almonah v'ochlu b'shorecha v'sodehu. The Torah says the following. From the crops that you grow, okay, and we're doing this in a very simplistic way, because obviously a lot more details, you have to take off the following things and give them to the following people. First, you have to take off Truma Gedola. Truma Gedola has no amount from the Torah. The rabbis gave it an amount. If you're generous, you give 1/30. If you're average, you give 1/40. And if you're stingy, you give 1/50. Those are the amounts of Truma Gedola, but even one kernel is sufficient from the Torah. Then there is Maaser Rishon. Maaser Rishon is the first tenth. You take a tenth of what's left, and you give that to the Levi. Then there is Maaser Sheni, second tenth. Of what's left after that, you take another tenth. That tenth, you have to bring up to Yerushalayim, and eat it in Yerushalayim. Or, you can redeem the crop for money, take the money to Yerushalayim, and then buy food items in Yerushalayim and eat it in Yerushalayim. That's called Maaser Sheni. These all apply the first 2 years of the Shemitah cycle. First year, second year of the Shemitah cycle, you have to take off Truma, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni. The third year of the cycle, instead of Maaser Sheni, you give Maaser Oni. You take off the second tenth, and instead of bringing it to Yerushalayim and eating it yourself, you give it to the poor. In the fourth year of the cycle, you start again. The fourth and fifth year, right, are just like the first and second year. Truma, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni. The sixth year is like the third year. Truma, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Oni. The seventh year is Shemitah. You don't take anything off during the Shemitah year because it's all Hefker anyway. It belongs to everybody. That is the cycle of, now in the third year, the Torah said that for 3 years, if you don't want to take these things off and put it in your silo and hold on to it, you can. But by the third year, you must get everything out of the house. Not necessarily after the third year. Meaning, the fourth year, by Pesach time, you must have taken care of all that you had to do during those first 3 years. You have to actually get it out of the house, give the truma to the Kohen, give the Maaser Rishon to the Levi, give the Maaser Sheni, redeem it, bring it to Yerushalayim and eat it, or what's it called, destroy it, right? Destroy the coin that you redeemed it with, and give the Maaser Oni to the poor people. You have to have taken care of all these things by the end of the third year, by Pesach of the fourth year, and similarly, by Pesach of the seventh year. And then, when you do this, you say the following, the Omar to the national, when you get rid of all these things, when you take care of them, and see to it that they are taken and designated properly, then you make the following designation. You should say before God, I have removed all of the holy parts of my grain from the house, all these things that had to be separated and given away. I've given it to the Levi, to the Ger, to the orphan, the widow, just as you commanded me. I've not transgressed anything, nor have I forgot anything. I didn't eat Maaser when I was an Onen, when somebody had died, and they hadn't been buried yet. And one of my seven relatives, that's called an Onen. I didn't eat the Maaser. You know, a person like that's not allowed to eat Maaser. Lo bi'arti mimenu b'tamei. I didn't separate it and v'matamei. I didn't make it defiled. Lo nesati mimenu l'meis. I didn't use the ma'aser sheni for things other than food. I didn't make something for buy a casket with it for a dead body or something. It has to be something that you can enjoy food wise. Shamati v'kol Hashem elokai, asisi k'chol Hashem zivisani. I listened to the voice of God. I did everything you commanded me. And therefore, hashkif from the ma'on kodshom and hashamayim, look down from your holy habitation in the heavens. Ubarich es amcha es Yisrael, the Yisrael Adom, Hashem asata lanu. Bless the Jewish people and the land you gave us. Kasher nishba la'nak of the same, like you promised our forefathers. Eretz zov haschol v'dvash, a land flowing with milk and honey. This is called Bir Maisrus and Vidui Maisrus. Okay, now let's go through some of the laws, and then we'll get to some of the ideas in both of them. Let's start with the laws of Bir. Removing, like we said, the end of 3 years, in the fourth year, from the first day of Pesach till the last day of Pesach, you have time, then this is the deadline. You could have done all these things earlier. But if you didn't, this is the deadline. You must take care of your 3 years of crops, and take off Trumas Maestras and make sure that it's given to everybody who has to. There's an argument here what exactly this mitzvah is. The Minchas Chinuch seems to say there's a mitzvah to do this. In other words, if you don't have any crops, you have no fruit, no vegetables, no nothing, go get some. Right? And so you'll be able to fulfill this mitzvah of removing it from the house and giving it to who it's supposed to be. The Chazonish says, no, the mitzvah is more that if you had all these things, make sure that you take care of it. But you don't have to have it. But the Chazon Ish says, it may be proper to go and get things that you could take off Trumas and Maisers from, right, at that point of the fourth year, so you'll have the mitzvah according to those opinions that say that it's important to do it, not just that if you have it, make sure that it's done. The Chazon Ish, okay, now, what do you do with it? Truma Gedola, right? Today, we don't give it to the Kohen. Well, most people don't give it to a Kohen because we don't know who are really Kohanim, right? The Kohen doesn't have a, he's only a Chazaka. We assume that they're Kohanim, and therefore they have to keep all the laws of Kahuna, whatever. But when it comes to giving them monetary things, we could say, prove you're a Kohen, I'll give you the money. If you can't prove you're a Kohen, I don't have to give it to you. So we don't give it to a Kohen most of the time. We destroy it, wrap it up, burn it, whatever. But we have to separate it. We have to separate the Truma, but we don't give it to. Some people do give it to a Kohen. But since it's Tamei, the only thing a Kohen can do with it is either feed it to his animals, or he can use it as fuel, to fuel his oven or whatever. But he can't eat it. Maaser Rishon, we also separate. Some people give it to a Levi. This does not have to be eaten pure impurity. It can be eaten even defiled. So a Levi can eat it. But according to the Chazon Ish, and that's how most people are conduct themselves, we don't give it to a Levi for the same reason. The Levi can't prove he's a Levi. So you prove you're a Levi, I'll give you the money. Can't prove you're a Levi, I don't have to go out of my way to give it to you. It can be destroyed, whatever. Maaser Ani, we give to poor people. Okay, that, you don't have to prove you're poor. People can see that people are poor. So, and people can prove that they're poor. They may not be able to prove that they're a Kohen or a Levi, but they can prove they're poor. So, we give it to a poor person, Maaser Ani, and you don't have to run after poor people to give it to them. If there are no Aniyim in your city, right, then you only have to separate it and either give it to a Gabbai, somebody who takes care of poor people or whatever, or hold on to it until poor people will show up. Maaser Sheni. You can't eat Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim today because everybody's defiled and there is no wall around Yerushalayim and there is no Beis HaMikdash. So you have to separate it and then you redeem it on a coin and you can redeem it many times on the same coin, depends on the value of the coin. Each time has to be a Shava Pruta, which is about 3 to 5 agurot. So if you have a 10 agurot coin, you can do it about 100 times or whatever, more than that, 200 times. And then, when you use up that coin, so you take another coin, and if over the 3 years you had a lot of coins, then in the Erev Pesach of the fourth year, you get, what's it called, a 10 agurot coin, and you exchange that for all the 10 shekel coins that you had, and you destroy that coin. That coin has to be destroyed. You crush it up. Crush it. You can't do anything with it, so you can only destroy it. You crush it, or you throw it to the sea. But you can't throw it into some place. Can't throw it in the garbage, and disgrace it. Either throw it in the ocean or grind it up. Burying it. If you bury it in a place where no one could ever find it, okay. But if you bury it in a place where it could be found, then you're causing other people to use it wrongly. Okay. Next. Those are the halachas of the beer. Now comes the mitzvah. On the last day of Pesach, you preferably go to the Beis HaMikdash in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and you stand in the Azara, the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, and you make the following declaration, which we read already, that I removed everything and I did everything right. The Rambam holds that this mitzvah applies even today. It doesn't depend on the Beis HaMikdash, even though in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the place to do it preferably was in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, but it could be done anywhere, and even when there's no Beis HaMikdash. So there is a mitzvah today to, on the last day of Pesach, in the fourth and seventh years of the Shemitah cycle, to make this declaration. And there are shuls in Yerushalayim where that is the minhag, that on the last day of Pesach, on the fourth and seventh years of the Shemitah cycle, they get together mincha time in the shul, and they read this parasha from the Torah and make this declaration. The Ravid holds that this mitzvah only applied in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. It doesn't apply today at all. And the Sefer HaChinuch says that l'chatchila, it only applies in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. But in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, preferably you did it in the Beis HaMikdash, but if you didn't, you're yotzei anywhere in the world. But when there is no Beis HaMikdash, there is no mitzvah. So only the Rambam holds that today there is a mitzvah. The Chazon Ish holds that since there are many things that we can't do properly, we can't give it to the Kohen, we don't give it to a Kohen, we don't give it to a Levi, everything is defiled, so we don't make this declaration. We rely on the opinions that it doesn't apply today, because anyway, many of the things we can't do properly. And if you can't do them properly, you don't make the declaration is, I've done everything properly. If you haven't done everything properly, you're a liar. However, there are, like we said, opinions, the Aderes, who held that there is a mitzvah today, and it's something to do, and we say it in reading it from the Torah on the last day of Pesach, mincha time. In any case, according to everybody, we don't make any bracha on this mitzvah, nor a shechianu, since it's not clear that the mitzvah applies or not. Now, everybody should say this on their own, and you can also fulfill it by listening to somebody else saying, and he's motzi you, he says it, you listen, and it's like you said it. Or a lot of people could say it together. A lot of people could listen to one person reading the Torah, and it's as if they're saying it. This declaration that I removed everything from the house, I've done everything right, but the Torah goes, that pasuk in the Torah, which we read. This is the third year now of the Shemitah cycle. So next year, not this year Pesach, next year Pesach. Women, wait a second, women converts are putter from the vidui. They have to get rid of their trumas and maestras, but they don't make this declaration. Because in the declaration says, the land that you gave me, and women don't have a share in Eretz Israel. They don't have a portion. So therefore, they don't have this mitzvah. But Kohanim and Leviim, who do have a portion, right, they got Ori HaLeviim, the cities of the Leviim were given to the Leviim, and the Kohanim, they do say this declaration. Also, there are opinions that say that someone who doesn't own land in Eretz Israel doesn't say this declaration. Others hold that even if you don't own land, you still have to make the declaration. Someone who didn't have any grain, no tevel, or he had it and it all got burnt up, all got lost, he never took off from us in Maestris, right, doesn't make this declaration. If you never had anything to separate, then you don't make the declaration. If you did not give the matanas properly, if you didn't do everything right, then you don't make the declaration either. Okay. Now let's see some of the ideas behind this. Those are the basic halachas. What are some of the ideas behind it? The Malbim says, what's the idea that every 3 years is a deadline, You must get these things out of your house, give them to who they belong to, or whatever. So the Malbim says, because people would be prone to hold these holy items in their house like a segula. Oh, I want to keep Meiser Truma in my house, right, because it's nice to have holy things in my house. And they would end up not giving it to the people who are supposed to get it. And also, they may end up eating it themselves, which is awesome. Only a Kohen can eat Truma. If you're not a Kohen, if you eat Truma, you're liable to a death penalty. So if they hold it in the house, you know, as a sacred memento, there's a chance that they'll end up eating it wrongly, and there's a chance they'll never give it to the people who are supposed to get it. This is supposed to be parnasa for the Kohen. If you're holding it as a memento in your house, the Kohen can't eat it. So therefore, the Torah made it, and you have a deadline. By 3 years, you better get out of the house. Make sure that people who are supposed to get it, and you don't keep it around. Okay. What's the idea of vidui? The idea behind this declaration. Okay. The Chinuch says a very interesting thing. He says that that which makes a human being special is speech. That's what distinguishes us from the animal. We can talk. We're chai hamedaber. And therefore, a person's speech is very dear to him, because that's what represents his humanity. And therefore, we find that people may be prone to sin, but when it comes to sinning with their speech, they're extra careful, because speech is something sacred. I don't know if that applies today so much, but people would be more prone to sin with actions than to sin with their speech, to say things that are lies or whatever. If you say something, people usually stick to their word, because my word is sacred. A lot of people like that, even non-Jews. Their word is sacred. They wouldn't think twice about sinning in action, but with their speech, that's holy to them. And therefore, if you know that you're going to have to come before God and say, I did everything right. I separated all these things the way they should have been separated. I gave them to who was supposed to give them. And you know that if you're lying, that would be a terrible breach of saying something mamish in front of God. So that will ensure that you'll do the things properly. You may not have the incentive to do it properly on its own, but if you know you're going to have to confess and make a declaration, and if you don't do it properly, you're lying, then it'll be an incentive to do it properly. That's what this Sefer HaChinuch says. Another idea is that when you know that you're going to have to say this before God, right, you're going to have to say to God, I did everything properly, you're not going to want to lie at that time when you're talking to God directly. So again, that will be an incentive to do it properly. Now the question that many of the commentaries deal with is the following. How do you normally understand vidui? Where do you know vidui from? Yom Kippur, right? Vidui. Vidui means confession. Okay? Now imagine if somebody would come on Yom Kippur and say, God, I have looked over my past year, and I've done everything right, I haven't forgotten anything, I haven't done anything wrong, I confess. Would you consider that a vidui? Is that a confession? What is usually confession? Confession usually is I've done something wrong. Not coming to God and saying, God, I did everything right. That is not confession. So why did the rabbis call this? The Torah doesn't call it this. But the rabbis refer to this declaration that you have to make, which is basically, I removed everything from the house the way I was supposed to, I gave it to the people I'm supposed to, I didn't forget anything, I didn't, I didn't do anything wrong. They call that vidui meiser, the confession over meiser. The obvious question is, why do they call it a confession? What does that have to do with confession? Confession is that you didn't do everything right, and here you're declaring that you did everything right. Why is that called confession? So let me tell you a array of different answers to that question. The most famous is the Sfarno. Sfarno says something phenomenal. He says like this. He says, originally, every Jew was supposed to be a Kohen. Every Jew could have been a Kohen. We could have made the sacrifices, we could have eaten Truma. You wouldn't have to give it to a special caste, special part of the Jewish people. Everybody could have been a Kohen. And in every family, the firstborn would have had the prerogative of being the Kohen of the family. But it wasn't only the firstborn. Every single Jew could have been a Kohen, maybe even Jewish. Everybody could have been a Kohen. Why did we lose it? Because we served the golden calf. And the only tribe that remained 100% faithful to God was the tribe of Levi. Therefore, God said, the rest of the Jewish people are not fit anymore to be Kohanim. There has to be only one tribe that was totally faithful by the golden calf. They're going to be the Kohanim. Okay? So, if we hadn't sinned by the golden calf, then I could be a Kohen. I didn't have to take the truma out of the house and give it to somebody else. I could have eaten it. Okay? So I confess, God, I'm making a confession. My ancestors sinned by the golden calf. And therefore, I had to remove all these things. I did everything right, but I wouldn't have had to do anything. I could have eaten it myself if everything would have been okay. Now, on the surface, and one second, not only that, but we say, and therefore, we really deserve punishment. But please, God, since we did everything right, based on the circumstance, have mercy on us and give us a blessing. Now, that sounds wild. I didn't serve the golden calf. I wasn't even there. I have to go confess for sins that happened thousands of years ago and say, I really deserve punishment, but please, God, you know, have mercy on me. What do I deserve punishment for? I didn't do that. Not me. The answer, I think, is, aside from the simple answer, that the sin of the Jewish people makes a blemish in all generations. So there's a blemish in me. But it's more than that. I could have had more potential. I lost it. The loss of potential is something to be sad about. I could have been more, and now I can't. That in itself is something to confess. And if you have diminished potential, it's something that is normally a negative thing. That's how important it is to fulfill your potential, even if it's not your fault. You could have had more potential and you lost it. Something is a blemish. Something to confess. That's the Sfarno. The Yalkut Me'am Loes says that the hint is in the following. We say, I did just about everything you said. Asisi kichol asher tzidisani. I did like you commanded me, but not exactly. I didn't do it 100%. I did it. I was Yotze. But I didn't do it exactly as you wanted. I heard it in the name of Rabbi Soloveitchik Zatzal from New York. Same idea. Asisi kichol asher tzidisani. Okay? I could have done better. Okay, I did it. I fulfilled my command. I fulfilled the command, but I'm confessing that it could have been better. I could have done it with more kavana. I could have done it much more precision-wise. Could have done it earlier. Could have done it faster, whatever it was. So I'm confessing that, one hand, I did it right, but I could have done it better. Next idea. The Malbim says, the reason it's called vidui is because the concept of vidui is something, saying something low between you and God. So that's one of the reasons of vidui too. Why do I have to confess my sin before God? Right? I know I did the sin. I regret it. I already accept that I won't do it again. Why do I have to say it to God? Because when you say it out, you whisper it to God, it shows you believe that there's a God who knows that you sinned, who's concerned about your sin, and who will listen. Otherwise, you sound crazy. What are you whispering to? If you don't really believe there's a God, right? Who are you talking to? Only crazy people talk to themselves. But if I really believe there's a God, I'm talking to him. And I'm telling him, right, that I did something wrong. So here the same thing. I believe that God is listening. That's why it's called confession. I'm speaking to God and telling him that did everything the way I was supposed to. Okay? The Minchas Chinuch says that this confession is for somebody who waited for 3 years to take care of all of this. He didn't do it right away when he should have done it. So even though there's nothing wrong, you have 3 years to wait, but it's not preferable. So that's the confession. I waited 3 years to take care of all of this. I procrastinated for 3 years. That's also part of the confession. Rav Meir Arak says a Hasidic idea. He says, we say God remembers all the things that are forgotten. So obviously he doesn't remember the things that are remembered. Because you don't forget them, you don't have to remember them. So what does it mean? He remembers the things that are forgotten. So he says what it means is like this. When a person does a mitzvah, and he forgets about it, he doesn't take credit for it, that's the kind of mitzvah that God remembers. But the mitzvahs that people remember and take credit and brag about, God doesn't remember them. He only remembers the ones you forget. Here the guy has to come and say, I remember, I did everything right. That's a confession already. It's not everything right. If you're bragging you did everything right, then obviously that's not right. The Rav Menachem Mendel Miriminov, another Hasidic pshat, he says, anybody who thinks that he did everything right, obviously didn't do everything right. So that's what the confession is over here. I wanted to say a different idea. Let's get to it in a second. The Sheni Shmuel says something that led me to this idea. He says something different, which I don't want to go into. But it hit me, based on what he said, you can say this idea. He says, we say two things. Shomati b'kol Hashem, I listened to, into the voice of God, I did everything I was commanded. We've explained in the past here, and I have no time now to go into it in detail, but the concept that there's two levels of mitzvahs. There's doing the command. God said, do this, I do it. But then there's the will of God that is expressed through that command. For instance, Shabbos. Shabbos starts Friday afternoon, ends Moshe Shabbos. It's a command, you do it. But Shabbos is supposed to teach you something about how to lead your life. That's the will of God that's hidden in Shabbos, and it's supposed to teach you how to lead your life the rest of the week too. So you're supposed to look into the mitzvah and not just do the limited command, but learn from it how to apply it to the rest of your life. That's called God's will. That's listening into God's voice. Not just hearing His voice, but listening into it. So I say like this, Shamati, I heard inside what this is all about, but I only did what you commanded me. I didn't really take it and apply it to the broader picture. I did the command, right? That's the confession. Even though I knew there was more to it, I basically ended up just doing the command. That's the confession. Another idea, which I think is even more proper, more hits the mark, and more true in what this really means, I think, is the following. Why is it called vidui? Vidui is not confessing you did something wrong. It's only a portion of it. I'll give you an example. Let's say somebody gave you, your job is to be a stockbroker. I think this is what a stockbroker does. So people give him money, and he invests it, okay, for them. Let's say somebody gave me $1 million and asked me to invest it for him, okay? At the end of the year, or he asked me to disperse it, that's even better. Somebody gives me $1 million, he asked me to represent him in dispersing it to various charities or whatever, okay? And I dispersed it exactly as he wanted. Do I have to come back and tell him anything? Or can I just say, well, I did everything, I don't owe him any explanation? Yes or no? Do I owe him an explanation or not? Yeah, I owe him accounting. I have to come and account for what I did. Because he gave me this money and he expected me to give it out and he expected me to come back and report. That I owe him an accounting. That's vidui. Vidui is giving God an accounting. And I did everything right. But God gave me these things. He expected me to disperse it, to use my life properly. I have to come on Yom Kippur, even if I did nothing wrong, and confess to God that I did what he wanted me to do. I have to give him an accounting. If I did things wrong, that's even worse. But that's all part of vidui. Even if you did everything right, you owe God an accounting for doing what he asked you to do. You have to come and account for yourself. You are accountable to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Therefore, God said, look, I gave you all these crops, and I asked you to disperse it to various people. You owe me an accounting. You have to come and tell me that you did it right. That's also confession. I confess that I did it right, meaning I confess that I'm accountable. It's confessing your accountability. That's what it's all about. And that's what the Eish Shel Avraham says, I found. It's like you have a partner, and you have to come and account to your partner what you did in the business. Even if you did everything right, you owe him an accounting. You're accountable to him. What connection do all of us have to the month of Elul? First of all, we're going to come Rosh Hashanah and have a lot of tefillos Rosh Hashanah. The main thing is davening with your mouth. Yom Kippur vidui, with your mouth. So it's good during Elul to get a good understanding of how important it is what you say. Because we're going to have a lot of mitzvahs of speech, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, that if you don't appreciate how important speech is, you're not going to appreciate the importance of these mitzvahs. So this is one mitzvah, like the Chinuch says, that shows the importance of speech. It's good preparation for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Next thing. One of the hints to Elul is Ish L'Re'ehu Matonis L'Avyonim. One of the things that averts an evil, bad judgment is tzedakah. So learning about the dispersion of all these things to the Kohen, the Levi, the poor person, or whatever, is a good thing to do during Elul because it teaches you the importance of tzedakah. What? Ish L'Re'ehu U'Matonos L'Avyonim. The first letters of those words spell Elul. Ish L'Re'ehu Aleph Lamed U'Matonos Vav L'Avyonim Lamed is Elul. It's from the Gilas Esther. Also, our prayers have to be in front of God. So learning about this confession that is between you and God helps to prepare you for that confession of Yom Kippur. Another thing is that we're going to come on Yom Kippur and we're going to want to confess our sins. We should realize, as we learned here from the Sfarno, that sin is not just you did something wrong. But if you had potential to do better, and you didn't live up to that potential, that's also something wrong. See, you did everything right. I didn't do any averes. But you could have done it better. You could have had more potential to do more things. That in itself is something to confess. And also, sin, even something done thousands of years ago, not by you, can leave a blemish in the Jewish people. So you understand how serious sin is. The sin they did back then leaves a blemish in me today. And also this concept of knowing that it's not just what God says I should do, the narrow, limited mitzvah that's important, but it's learning from that mitzvah how to apply it to your general life, how to listen into what God said. What is God's will that is manifested by this mitzvah that I can apply to my character building, my values, my standards, my goals in life? What does the mitzvah teach me that I can apply in a much broader sense to my whole lifestyle? That's also important. That also we learn from this parsha. So it has a lot of things that you can use in preparation for in Elul for Yomim and Noraim, and many concepts that are interesting concepts, even though this mitzvah pretty much doesn't apply today 100%. It's only a vestige of it that applies. But even mitzvahs that don't apply, if you learn them properly, have tremendous relevant lessons on a daily basis, and most certainly for this special season. Okay. Have a good Shabbos.